Welcome to Speed City with John Massengill, Les Kaiser, and Jonathan Green. It's the fastest hour on the radio. Speed City.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, this makes it unbelievable. And I feel part of me is Italian in a way, you know, because I have a lot of friends and grew up with the culture, so all the more special.
Do you feel...
Italian. Let's go to Italian.
I want to...
Volete parliamo italiano? Siete i migliori del mondo, veramente. Incredibile. Grazie mille. Troppo bello. Proviamolo.
He ain't going to Wichita. He's going to Austin, and he could be leading the championship. Welcome to Speed City.
Thank you, Nico Rosberg. I had no idea what a voice he had.
What a great day to the end of the day that was.
You know, at one point in the middle of that, it sounded like he was almost making fun of it because his voice was cracking. I know that's not what he was trying to do, obviously, but it sounded like his voice was cracking.
Well, the irony is Eddie Jordan's in a band, and he's pretty a bad drummer, too. So it's kind of like two bad musicians up on the stage. But a great day. But the reason I wanted to play that is a psychological edge massively now, because the championship is now wide open again, having had the last six races where Hamilton has absolutely taken him to the cleaners. And it's, you know, if this were a tennis match, if this were the US Open, it would be like, all right, two sets each.
Yeah,
let's take it on.
2 points difference. Hamilton is up by two over Nico. That is it.
But I think the point is the psychological thing.
Oh, yeah.
Is that
absolutely.
Rosberg is now back in his face, essentially, by doing all that.
He's in his face, but honestly, Hamilton gave it to him. He dumped it on the... Off the start,
but
again.
But he said that wasn't his fault.
Well, we got a guest.
Well, if you listen to him in the beginning, he says it was. And then
it depends on when you ask him, right?
Well, we got a guest who knows all about world championship rivalries and making it close. We're very delighted to have in the studio once again the legend that is Kevin Schwantz. Welcome aboard. We were just telling you how close the championship is in Formula One, but would you agree that that really does change the tables a bit?
Oh, to have out-qualified him like he did, Hamilton must have thought Sunday was going to be easy. And you make a mistake right at the beginning, or I guess not a mistake. He says it was something that was an electronic issue or whatever it was. It wasn't his fault.
Synapses.
To get beat as convincingly as he got beat leaves you going to the next race weekend and scratching your head.
And actually, Will Buxton, by the way, who I thought was exemplary today, also asked him about it, because actually Nico, before the start of the race, came on the radio and said, I've got a hesitation in my start procedure. What do I do? Something on those lines. And he reported back and said that. And he actually asked during the interview with Lewis after the race, did you hear that? And he kind of looked at him kind of quizzically like, I'm not going to answer that. But no, I had no problem with I had no hesitation in my starting thing. I said, I felt like saying, well, what did go wrong then, Lewis?
Yeah.
Nope. I think he just choked.
But he's had the better of Rosberg. And I think today could have been really significant. We'll look back when we get to Austin and we're sitting there in the stands, or sitting there in the commentary booth going, hey, man, the championship's on the line. And the reason is because he kept messing his starts up, including a massive, massive day at Monza, where I think, and that's why I wanted to play that kind of, bravado by Rosberg, because it's the first time we've really seen him, grab the crowd and also just sort of say, hey, this is my day. I'm not going to let Lewis steal the day, and I'm not going to let Vettel talk in Italian to the Italian fans and make it a Ferrari fest. I'm going to talk to my fans as well in Italian. He's a very educated guy, is Rosberg, and I think today he just showed a different side of him.
Yeah, very uncharacteristic, really. But, well, it was obviously a fantastic race, especially at the beginning. There were several parts about Formula One, but I want to talk about what else we got on the show today, because obviously with Kevin Schwantz, we're going to talk a lot about MotoGP and...
Suzuki back.
I know, Suzuki.
I'm just
incredible.
Glad Kevin put the champagne bottle down to come in.
I am so good that you're in town, man, because I know you're rushing off again, but you are the perfect person to talk about what has been a fantastic day for a kid in MotoGP, and let's not forget the kid is 21 years of age, Maverick Vinales, and it's his first win in MotoGP.
You know
MotoGP.
What really put his age in perspective? You know who he was named after?
Yeah, Maverick from Top Gun, yeah.
Doesn't that make you feel old now?
Yeah.
You know, and I guess the cool part about it is he had to do it twice. You know, he looked like he was in the process in that first lap of the first start. He was getting ready to hand them their heads on a platter then.
That's what.
And I'm sure as he rode into pit lane, he's like, oh, my, now we just got to try and do this again. Mm. But to have the composure that he did and to get another decent start, not a great start, didn't lead it into the first turn, but had the opportunity to make a couple of passes, made the pass, and then just started distancing himself from those guys.
Exactly. The first time I go, what a lucky shot. Run, Maverick, run. But the second time, I was like, whoa, okay, I'm going to call this skill now, because he actually pulled it off the second time. The first time, you know, I might get lucky in 100 tries, but Maverick did it twice on the same day, in the same crowd, the same anxiety.
The first one that might make you scratch your head, too, was that first start. Laverty was second.
Yes, that's right.
When they red flagged.
He disappeared after that.
And then he backed up. I didn't see what exactly happened to him. I know he and somebody bumped a little bit. Maybe he and Brattle bumped.
He was down in 17th by the third lap.
Yeah. So I don't know what happened there. But I was thinking, wow, these. And I had thought that I thought when I... You know, it was kind of early this morning when I woke up and turned the TV on.
That's what DVRs are for, Kevin. I watch it at 6 o'clock tonight.
He got up to go shoot birds. He wasn't watching.
They said that he'd gone with the soft tire in the front. And I thought, oh, well, that's what got him that gap in the first. It'd be interesting to see if that'll last. And then when they threw all the tires up, he was on exactly this. He was on a hard front and a medium rear, just like everybody else who was anywhere. Marquez was the only one that made the soft front work for a while, and had he not just gone bonkers the last couple of laps, you know, if he'd have just stayed calm, he'd ended up second.
I know, it was a dumb move at Stowe. I mean, of all places,
actually hit Crutchlow.
He actually hit Crutchlow. They actually showed the super slow mo of his hitting his knee. I mean, it was a scary moment, and that's crazy. It's a very fast corner.
Yeah,
it's like
not,
a third
it's
or fourth
not, it's
gear
not real
corner.
Fast, is it?
Not really, no. And by the way, if he's saying it's fast, let me ask you though. I mean, I mean, like I said, it's delightful that you're here because it's Suzuki. It's 9 years, and I mean, you know, you were in the heyday, Barry Sheen in the heyday of Suzuki's winning back when in the day, and then they went through a massive drought before, you know, Sete Gibbono, and then obviously Kenny Roberts. But you know, it's been a long, long period.
Good you remembered that name. I thought you were going to struggle with that. I'm going to have to help.
Well, they said that this
Deadbeat
is the
Junior.
Exactly.
They had said this was the first Suzuki win since 2007 with Chris Vermeulen.
That's right.
In the wet at Le Mans.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the last dry race would go back to Gibbernau in 01, I think they said before.
Correct.
That.
Yeah, Valencia.
And if you back up much further than that, it'd be Kenny in 2000.
Wow.
Or it'd be Beattie in 95, probably.
Yeah.
You know, what do you think? And so David Abbrivio announced he was going to Suzuki on Speed City. We're lucky to have that here. But does he look like a genius now doing this and forecasting what's happening and putting Suzuki on the podium the way he's done?
You know, I think Brivio, whatever he's done and however he's done it, whether it's working with Yamaha, helping to put together the deal that took Rossi from Honda to Yamaha, and get this Suzuki Grand Prix team back up and running right at the front now. You know, he's a professional. He seems to be able to see a lot in a young rider, even more so than most of us who feel like we know a lot about the sport. You know, when he said Maverick, I was like, oh, you know, well, okay, just got to get another Spanish guy on the bike, don't we? But Maverick has done nothing but impress me since he first got on the Suzuki. So tip of the hat to Brivio. And I think it was pretty much his complete recommendation that Maverick was. And, you know, I don't think the Japanese had any say in it whatsoever. I think maybe they kind of nodded their heads and said, yeah, Young, that's a good idea. Let's keep, you know, let's get another guy who's proven somewhat. But Maverick and Aleix have done a great job developing that Suzuki, and I think you saw Aleix pull up beside Maverick and congratulate him, and I think it happened. I'm sure it's still going on, that big party in England
right
now.
Well, let me ask you this. This is a program that literally 2 years ago, and I remember you were here and you were looking at the bike yourself, and I know you were very close to watching it develop. They still, you know, turn to you occasionally to talk about, you know, what, you know, when this was all coming together. You were in the picture as well to be part of it, and I know that you've been very close to this. Why now? Because at the beginning of this race, we had a rain practice, so we went into this with a lot of different tire choices. But Suzuki weren't, I mean, we knew he got a pole, but, you know, we knew he was there on the front row, but we didn't think, oh, yeah, this is going to be an easy Suzuki win. In fact, Cal Crutchlow said this should be a walkover for Ducati today in the dry at Silverstone at a fast and long, airy track. So why today? Why Suzuki? Why today, do you think?
You know, I have no idea. It's just one of those things that you get the bike right, you get the tires right. And you know, I think we heard Maverick say on the podium after the race how confident he is, how much he likes Silverstone, how he feels like when he's there, he stands a chance of winning whatever race it is. He's been in Moto3, Moto2, MotoGP. So, you know, that I think is once again one of the biggest part of the equations is how good is that motorcycle, but how strong is that guy that's sitting on top of it, and not physically strong, but mentally strong. And Maverick's proven today, not the first start and not just a little lead at the end of the first lap, but he did it again a second time.
Do any harm, sorry.
This season, to me, has just been awesome with all the different winners. But I honestly kind of felt like Mark Marquez was living in a glass house today. Everything got thrown at him. Eventually,
today,
he came out the window and landed.
He's been living in a glass house for about 3 years.
Yeah. But, you know, all the things that happened from the bump with, our buddy from the boot camp.
Redding. Scott Redding.
Yeah, Scott. The bump at the beginning was Scott right there. That could have changed everything, and he still managed to collect, and they kept going. But there were so many bumps and near misses. I really sat up when Rossi and Marquez came together. There was no space for elbows between those two.
And you knew it was just going to keep going, too. They just battled for I don't know how long, but yeah, that was exciting.
Side by side for what, 4 or 5 or 6 different corners, and then Marquez found a way. I think Rossi got just a little bit anxious, got on the brakes a little too hard, getting into a corner, gave him just a bit of a gap, and then Marquez gets a sniff of Crutchlow. Oh, I'm going to get to second now. You know what? I bet I can even still win this thing. Which you got to give the kid credit for thinking that way. You know, I'm never going to give up. But you, when you're leading a world championship by the number of points you're leading them by, and you're getting ready to pass a person, you know, it's not the last lap. It's not the last corner. Think about it. Make it calculated. Make it clean. Get by him. Disappear. And take your second place points and add 6 or 7 points to your world championship lead.
Well, that nicely leads on to a question I had, because we're also looking at the legend that is Rossi, 250th Grand Prix today, 181st Premier Program Premier Class podium. Is he not the smarter guy right now? He picked up another podium. Okay, took a few points out of Marquez, but the way Marquez rode today, that gap has come down now. He's second in the championship. You know, we've got 7 races to go. If he beats him, if he just stays 4 points ahead every race, he's going to be there or thereabouts come Valencia again. And the wiser heads would say if he gets an easy, you know, if he gets a normal race at Valencia rather than having to tie one down behind his back and start at the back, he's odds on for another championship.
You know, you can't ever count the 46 out, that's for sure. I think Valentino, you know, he was talking about rear grip, drive grip problems in the back of the bike from you know, before half distance. And you could see that he was struggling a little bit. He and Crutchlow seemed to understand early on that the Suzuki was working a bit better than their bikes, and they were just going to settle it amongst themselves. And Marquez kept slowing them down, so they both disposed to him and thought, okay, now let's go at it. But, you know, Valentino just has that sixth sense of what's going on. How bad is this stuff getting underneath me? How much more can I get out of it? With the exception of the mistake that he made here in Austin. You know, I was so surprised when he fell here.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things that it's hard to say, but he's always seemed to be the smarter, wiser, and definitely intelligent racer.
Yeah. All right, guys, well, we got to take a break. We're joined in studio with Kevin Schwantz talking MotoGP, and we're going to continue to talk. We're going to talk a little bit more about the Formula One story, about the American possible interest in ownership. In
takeover.
The takeover, that's the word. All right, listen to Speed City live from Austin, Texas. Back after these quick messages.
Precision Camera and Video is the largest camera store in Texas, with over 10,000 square feet and packed with all the latest manufacturer offerings. Founded in 1976 and still owned and operated by its founders Jerry and Rosemary Sullivan, Precision Camera is committed to the finest customer experience. With hand-picked products and on-hand experts, you won't find a more helpful, knowledgeable, and accommodating sales staff for quality service. Come see for yourself, Precision Camera and Video, 2438 West Anderson Lane.
Hey Austin, the heat is on in Texas, and that means it's time for a special summer sizzle from Ducati Austin. Time to head to the hill country on a pure Italian icon. XDiavel, Multistrada, or Scrambler. For the month month of August. Get 0 to 60 and take control of financing. 0% interest for up to 60 months or in-store credit. Come in store for details to Ducati Austin, 812 East Breaker Lane. Ducati Austin, Italian style and Texas soul since 2001. Hey everyone, Speed City host and Moto America commentator Jonathan Green here, letting you know that the long summer wait is over and it's time to go racing again. The grand finale of the Moto America season is just around the corner and the championships are all on the line. That's right, it's the Moto America Yamaha Superbike Challenge of New Jersey from September 9th through the 11th. Hayes, Beauvais, Elias and Hayden as Yamaha try to defend against the hard-charging Suzukis. Come join us and see the best in two-wheel motorsport in America. Buy online and receive complimentary VIP paddock passes. Kids under 12 go free. For more information, go to www.motoamerica.com.
Don't miss the FanStand ATX Thursday night game of the week.
The snap, it hits one of the up men, and Anderson will fall on the football at the 32-yard line. He catches it and avoids the defender, dives for the end zone, and what a play. Lundquist takes the snap. He fakes. He's going to throw deep down the middle. It's wide open, and it's Dean Dixon caught on the 3-yard line. He's into the end zone. Touchdown, Anderson.
Thursday night at 7 on Talk 1370 and FanStandATX.com.
The right choice for breaking news first. Talk 1370. The right choice.
Hi, I'm Andrea Vizioso, and this is Speed City.
Welcome back to Speed City, live from Austin. We're talking MotoGP. I want to stick with MotoGP for a little bit longer. We do have that Formula One story we're going to talk about. But what did you have for MotoGP, Jonathan? Something else?
I just wanted to, now we got Kevin in here. I just want, what about Jorge? Where's he gone? I mean, yeah. Lorenzo is the world champion. And he was hardly mentioned in the commentary today. He was like 8th or 7th or something like that. But I mean, what happened?
When everybody was scrapping for second place, yeah. The 4 or 5 guys were going at it, he was half a second, 3/4, or maybe a full second behind, and he could not make any ground on those guys racing. He was just in front of Aleix Espargaró.
Right.
And then ended up, Aleix passed him, pulled away from him, then ran off the track, and I guess got penalized a second, or was going to get penalized a second at the end of the race. But I have no idea what's happened. It's silly to make an assumption like that, but I'm sure George is going to say that Yamaha is trying to make my life miserable.
Because he's leaving, right?
Because he's going to Ducati. Yeah. Yeah.
But it does seem strange. It's almost like a confidence thing because, all right, Bruno was wet, and you're careful in the wet because you don't necessarily want to be a hero and you don't have to be. And he is fighting for the championship. He was, he's second, third in the championship. There's only a couple of points between him and Rossi, but Rossi looks to be riding completely unfettered, and he looks to be riding cautiously, or at least unconfidently. And that's why I thought, it's interesting to see you agree, because it's just odd. I mean, for example, Alex Lowe's today rode Bradley Smith's bike to 12th place, never ridden the thing. And so he probably wasn't that far up the road, behind Jorge. So it just seems very strange that, like you say, while we were watching this amazing scrap at the front, I kept thinking to myself, well, where's the world champion?
I think it also lets you know how deep the talent is and how good all the bikes in the field are now. You have a bit of an off weekend. You don't get things set up right. You got a couple wet practice sessions. Don't let you get that thing working quite like you want it to in the dry. And then they throw a dry race at you. It's easy. It's easy to back yourself up to, even outside the top 10 sometimes.
Well, one thing's for sure, that race was astounding. Jonathan, you called me and I hadn't seen it yet, and you were like, I'm not going to say a word. You just watch this. And I just was unbelievable. The action behind Vinales
and
all the way.
And the cameraman they put on the back of Rossi's bike. He's only a little guy, but he did a really good job of staying with the action.
That guy was... All right, guys. Well, I want to move on to Formula One, back to this story we're talking about. But first, I want to remind everybody, we have Ryan Dial, who's going to be on the show in about 10 minutes.
Fine Scotchman, if ever I saw one.
Yeah, not a Floridian, as I accidentally...
Well, he is a Floridian. But
well, yeah, it's true. But yeah, he had a great weekend.
He's the marathon man.
He had a great weekend in Mexico in WEC, and he's coming to Austin and to do the, I think they're calling it the Double Dial, where he's going to race...
That's
IMSA, IMSA and WEC in 2 weeks, guys.
In two completely different cars. That is going to be a mind meld.
That's going to be pretty crazy, yeah.
He
one
does
in the daytime,
he
one
loves
at night.
Austin,
Wait, didn't
though.
He do this last year and then he also offered to drive for Uber on the way to the track. Wouldn't he the one?
Oh, I got an Uber story.
Let's wait a minute. We have to mention this Uber.
This
Paul
is
Tracy comment.
Who am I? The only person in Christendom that missed this was in the middle of the Indy commentary. As we all know, Paul Tracy is outspoken. He's kind of a Schwantz of Indy. I mean, you know, he'll tell it like it is. So they go to him and they say, "Hey, Robin Miller. So what's Andretti going to do next year? Marco Andretti, he's not doing so well. I think he's leaving his dad's team and joining Brian Herta." And they go, "Oh, that's one of the rumors, yeah. But I don't think he's got that many options." And Paul Tracy goes, "Yeah, about the only ride he's going to get is Uber."
Oh.
I was like, whoa!
And my favorite thing was the rest of the commentators completely ignored it and went
carried on.
Carried on.
Crickets.
Better keep talking. Better cover that one up.
Whoa! And moving right along.
All right. Speaking of moving along, I'm going to read this headline. This is in Forbes, and I tweeted this from the Speedcaster account about a half hour ago. It says, "Formula One sale to Liberty Media is a done deal." Now, look, I know there's no checks been passed and no contracts been signed, but this is Forbes.com, and that's a pretty strong headline. And I know, Jonathan, you have been all over this and following all
the
different...
As you know, I mentioned it last week on the show. John Malone is a huge media mogul and an American, and one which makes me very interested in this story. As we've heard, there's always rumors about the sale of Formula One. And let's face it, the guy's not getting any younger. Mr. Eccleston, that is.
He's getting younger.
His hearing is going, too, if you heard Will Buxton.
Yeah, he's dating younger. Yeah, I know that.
Sensational interview. Seminal interview, that. What? No, I've not heard nothing. Absolutely brilliant. But, yes, there is a big story. And, in fact, it's gathering moss. You know, this story won't go away. Eddie Jordan, evidently, a former team owner and the guy that was doing the interviews at the end of the race, actually put Bernie on the spot and said, "Are you selling? You know, are you going to be involved? Are you selling?" And, again, he's denied, as is McKenzie from CVC, but it won't go away. The figure is $8.5 billion. There's a lot of talk about keeping Bernie involved because obviously the teams are all contracted. You know, the deals that have been done over the last year, you know, since 1970s, have all been effectively, you know, kind of whether he's in the middle of those deals or not, Bernie's always been a part. But it would be a massive story both for Formula One and for Formula One globally as well.
Yeah, it's crazy. And if this were to happen, guys, I'm just thinking about the ramifications. You know, since we started the show five years ago or so, we've been saying all the components it need to really build an American audience in Formula One. Obviously, we now have the track here. We've got an American team, all these components. But nothing like having American ownership of a company that owns a broadcast network to help
us
along.
Yeah, I mean, if there's a criticism to be made of Formula One, I do think that the media side of it is the smaller side. I think it's never been developed as much as it's been. They've been very tight with stuff, and I take my hat off to them. You know, I've worked for them. They're an amazing company. But, you know, in this country especially, you know, you've got to promote. And, you know, here we are. We do our bit. But, you know, there's a lot more that Formula One, as a global entity and a global entity that represents so many big products, could do more with. You know, when you think about, you know, the manufacturers and so on and so forth, this could be a really exciting time in the next 10 years.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy to follow this, and we'll hope to see what happens here. We're everyone's periscoping now. Somebody tweeted us they want us to periscope, so we're periscoping, so we're all distracted.
How weird.
Well,
I didn't invite these people in here.
All right, what are the components to this? I mean, I think about this. There's no telling what kind of investment that these guys could bring to Formula One. I just hope that this happens, honestly. That's what I'm saying.
Well,
I hope it happens.
And let's be honest. I mean, at the end of the day, like I said, the Formula One has been run a certain way for a long, long time, and it's been very, very successful. Let's face it, it's got a global audience of over 500 million. It's a huge success.
I was just about to say, this Forbes article talks about how much money is being made by Formula One. And, you know, you got to credit Bernie with that.
Absolutely.
He has been a
big
part of
that. And by the way, whatever happens, I hope Bernie is involved because they need him. And if we can put him on ice with Walt Disney and keep him going, please, because he is the impresario of all impresarios. I mean, what he has achieved has been incredible.
Well, he's achieved a lot, but he was pretty cagey today with Will Buxton. We have that clip. We have the audio from NBC today.
You've got to play it.
We've got to play. This is Bernie Ecclestone being interviewed by Will Buxton. It was just a quick on-the-grid kind of thing. Let's play that now.
Mr. Eccleston, new three-year deal for Monza. How excited are you to be back for another 3 years at Monza? It's good news, right?
Yeah.
And Formula One apparently is going to have new owners next week.
Really?
Is that going to be done? I don't know. It's what I've read.
I didn't know about that.
You're always the man that knows about these things.
No idea.
No idea.
No idea.
None at all. You're still going to be here.
Pardon?
You're still going to be here.
Will I still be here? I'm here.
Thank you, Bernie. Clear as mud.
I love... I'm starting the I Love Will Buxton Club. That was... I've done that job. That is a hard job to do. He is brilliant at it. And that is actually a brilliant interview.
Yeah, it was really
good. As always, Bernie, clear as mud.
Yeah, clear as mud.
Absolutely.
He says nothing.
If you DVR'd it and you didn't see this at the very beginning of the show, you have to go back and look at it because Bernie's expressions, it was pretty uncharacteristically Bernie because he looked kind of flustered just a little bit.
Yeah, he goes... That's the way to get Bernie is when he's not, you know, talk. He's very good at always talking to somebody. So, and he knows. He watches the live mics and Brundle comes out.
Will set him up great. Isn't it great? You're here at Monza for 3 more years. Oh, yeah. This is easy. I can talk to Will about this. Yeah. Then Will made a 90-degree turn.
Yeah, that was really good.
Well, that is a big news story anyway, that Monza, because that has been off and on and off and on, and Monza's, struggled to keep the Grand Prix, and it is such a great... I mean, you've been to Monza. I mean, it's such a great venue. I mean, I'd love it to stay on the calendar, and I think you saw the outpouring from the Tifosi today. I mean, it's a grand event.
It really is. I went to a Formula One test there, and it was one of the times I actually got to meet and stand around and talk to Ayrton Senna, and I just remember that as
thinking, that's pretty cool.
Wow, Monza, Senna, what else could
it
want?
Get any better?
That's your bucket.
What else?
Check a few bucket lists left off there.
All right, guys, cool. We got to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the Lone Star Le Mans because Ryan Dial's coming on. He's going to talk about the Dial double, and so we'll be back after these quick messages. Listen to Speed City live from Austin.
You know what you like. The power, the feel, the ride. When it comes to gear, you know what keeps you safe. Ducati Austin provides riders with the finest in Danese leathers, the best the market offers. Visit Ducati Austin on Breaker Lane just east of I-35 and throw your leg over the most iconic sports bike ever built.
Ducati.
Even take it for a test ride or see what's been described as art on wheels from MV Agusta. You know what you like. See it at Ducati Austin. Online at MotoAustin.com.
Precision Camera and Video is the largest camera store in Texas with over 10,000 square feet and packed with all the latest manufacturer offerings. Founded in 1976 and still owned and operated by its founders Jerry and Rosemary Sullivan, Precision Camera is committed to the finest customer experience. With hand-picked products and on-hand experts, you won't find a more helpful, knowledgeable, and accommodating sales staff for quality service. Come see for yourself, Precision Camera and Video, 2438 West Anderson Lane.
Want to drive your car at speed on Circuit of the Americas? Edge Addicts is your source for more COTA events and more COTA track time. Whether you're looking to host your own event or just be a part of the action, Edge Addicts can get you in the driver's seat and racing like a pro. All levels of drivers and all types of cars are welcome, with instructors available for first-time and novice drivers. Life is short and adventure is around every corner. So plan your high-adrenaline experience with Edge Addicts at edgeaddicts.com. Edge Addicts, it's better when you're driving.
Hey everyone, Speed City host and Moto America commentator Jonathan Green here, letting you know that the long summer wait is over and it's time to go racing again. The grand finale of the Moto America season is just around the corner and the championships are all on the line. That's right, it's the Moto America Yamaha Superbike Challenge of New Jersey from September 9th through the 11th. Hayes, Bobier, Elias and Hayden as Yamaha try to defend against the hard-charging Suzukis. Come join us and see the best in two-wheel motorsport in America. Buy online and receive complimentary VIP paddock passes. Kids under 12 go free. For more information, go to www.motoamerica.com.
Talk 1370.
The right choice.
The following is a paid commercial program. Views and opinions expressed are those of the host or their guests and are not necessarily those of Talk 1370 or Entercom Communications.
Hi, Brendan Hartley. This is Speed City.
Welcome back to Speed City. Jonathan, what'd you have?
A
Well, that was Brendan Hartley. The Kiwi, the fast Kiwi who just won in Mexico.
Did
yesterday.
It again.
Good for him. Brendan, lovely. Lovely bloke.
I remember the first time we saw him in Austin, and he was a hot shoe.
His voice was cracking.
Yeah.
Well, he was the development. He was the simulator and development driver for Mercedes Formula One. So he was actually doing the simulation work for Lewis Hamilton back
in
the day.
That's right, yeah. Well, but he was racing in Austin. He was blazing fast. He was kind of a Marquez-like because he was so crazy fast, and I think he was actually taking a couple of chances, and he crashed out of that first race here in Austin. But he has since cleaned up his act, I guess you could say, because he's done pretty well.
I've watched his career. He started off in single seaters. He was actually one of the Red Bull kind of chosen men, as it were, and they let him go. They have a strange kind of, the Red Bull kind of development program with young drivers is odd. They take on some of the fastest drivers in the world and develop them, and then suddenly kind of go, oh, we're not using you anymore. And there's a few like that. Kvyat came up the same way, and now look what's happening to him. It's a tough game, Red Bull, but it can lead to other things, and certainly he was one of the chosen few, and now alongside Weber and Lieb, he's unbelievable in WEC, and another brilliant win by Porsche yesterday.
You know, last year when he was here, he and I had some time to just chit-chat, and he was like, it's just so amazing to be in a team meeting and look, and there's Weber, and other way, there's Timo, and they're sitting there actually helping. He said that was a big difference, is on that team, said they're actually like big brothers helping him to understand what to do here, why not to do what you might think is natural.
Well, that, like, yeah, I don't know if you've read.
How cool is that?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if you've read Weber's book, but, you know, in the book, he talks about working with Vettel, and obviously, literally, they were two different sides of a garage for a long time, and there's Vettel doing all the winning, and, you know, Seb, you know, multi 21, Seb. Do you remember those days where, you know, he was not getting a looking from Vettel, and he said that when he joined Porsche and was open up with all these other drivers, he said it was just such a breath of fresh air to be sharing information and stuff. I mean, Kevin, you can probably talk to this. You know, it's a solitary world when you're fighting for a world championship, especially you don't share much with your teammate. But in endurance racing, it's a whole different ballgame. You need your teammates.
Yeah, absolutely. And to try and figure out what that setup is, it makes everybody happy, whether it's in a car or on a bike. It's not a happy medium to find, but teammates that work well together and talk and communicate definitely make that job easier.
Hey, we just heard from Ryan Dial. He's going to be calling in. I think he just called in just a second. But yeah,
I'm always asked one question when Kevin's going to be here. I'm not going to ask that question this time, but I will ask Kevin: are you going to be on two wheels anytime soon?
Next week,
Goodwood Revival.
That's not where you were going, though, is it? What are you doing then?
I am riding a Manx Norton.
Ooh, yes!
Wow,
a lot of fun. What year?
The Revival. I don't know what the vintage is, what the era for this year specifically is. It's a Ken McIntosh built machine. I've ridden his bikes the past couple of years. So,
do old bikes kind of? I mean, you know, my good buddy Steve Martin. He rides in the Katanas down in Phillip Island every year, and they are doing unbelievable speeds. And he's up against people like McWilliams, and they're not holding back. I always think though, how confident are you on an old? I mean, and, you know, they're well prepared, obviously, but it's still an old 80, you know, and your bike's going to be even older, and you are going to be racing it.
I rode with Jeremy in Australia earlier this year in the spring, and rode a XR69, it was called, so GS1000, basically, with a different factory frame and some different stuff underneath it, and they're big pigs to ride. You know, they're fast. They don't stop. They don't turn. There's a lot to it.
It's like a 60s muscle car.
A whole lot more effort than I really want to put into it. But the older stuff, the Manx is a lot of fun. Doesn't have enough brakes to get you in much trouble. it's when they tried to switch the shifter from the left side and the right side that really confused me, and then I had to crash it.
Okay. Well, once you crashed it, then you've got the limits and you're away.
All right, guys. We have our next guest on the line. We're going to bring him on. He is going to be coming to Austin for the Lone Star Le Mans 2 weeks from now, and he's going to be doing the DL double. So, Ryan Dial, welcome to back to Speed City.
Yeah, thank you for having me back on. Always fun.
Hey, guys. Man, this is going to be great. We're already seeing some of the teams show up, and so the excitement's starting to build up around here. What are you bringing new to us in your double here?
Well, I'm not sure how many other people are doing doubles, but I know there's not too many of us. I've never actually done a double on the same day. I've done it a couple of times over my kind of career. It's one race Saturday, one race Sunday. So I'm just hoping I figure out where all the buttons are. Both cars are quite different. I got the Corvette IMSA car and then the Patron P2. So I wish at the start of the year I tried to convince them to pull the buttons where I wanted, but apparently there's teammates that had a say too, so I didn't get my way.
Oh, override those. Hey, listen, first of all, congratulations from yesterday. I mean, tell us about Mexico.
Yeah, lots of chips and salsa, which was nice. I'm a big Mexican food fan. But, no, it's cool because I haven't been there since 2008. I think was the last time that we went there with Grand Am. And just a great event, you know, passionate fans. And they always, you know, like to pack out their stadiums. But, no, it was good. We had a good race. I think we finished kind of what we deserved. We were kind of third, fourth all weekend. And got caught with a red flag in qualifying, so we actually started the back, and we were like kind of like a machine ping pong ball for the P1 cars for the first hour, and found ourselves a number of laps down in the first hour, and then we just clawed our way back. 5 hours to go, had a couple of good stints, myself in the middle, and conditions got a little tricky, and then we put Pipo Durrani in for the last couple hours, and we lucked out a little bit. You know, I think fourth was where we were going to end up, but we had over 800 guests there from Tequila Patron. Our factory, the distillery, is actually about a four-hour drive from Mexico City, so kind of cool to get down there. You know, these are people that don't get to see what we do often, so it was nice to get on the podium and at least do it for our home.
Well, that combination, we're lucky to have you on the show. How did you get out of there in one piece? You're a Scotsman.
Well, I managed to hitch a ride back out with Mr. Patron, so it was nice to managed to get out there. And back home for Labor Day weekend here in the States.
Back in Florida, right?
Yeah, no. Back home in Florida, and got some friends over tonight, so I told them I had to put everything on hold to come and talk to you guys.
You're awesome. You're a good man. I think we asked you this last time. What are you wearing these days? Kevin Schwantz, by the way, is in our guest today here in the studio. He's got a question, but I want to know what you're driving at the moment, because we had you on last time and you were all excited because you had the ultimate car that you were driving around Florida.
Oh, I had my GT3.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I traded that, actually.
No!
I know. I traded it for a 458 Ferrari. So,
okay. Here I am worrying about it.
Hey, Ryan, I was...
Well, it was a little bittersweet deal. But the GT3, which I loved, still one of the best cars I ever drove. Like any 911 Porsche is one of the best sports cars you have. And then I actually won a car after the World Challenge season. I won a 911 Porsche in Germany. Which I was pretty excited to go over and get until I get told I couldn't bring it back to the U.S. So I found myself with a car in Germany that I couldn't bring to the States. And I sold that, and I was like, you know what? Childhood dream, time to do it. So I bit the bullet and somewhat regret selling my GT3. So maybe I'll flip it back.
Hey, Ryan, it's Kevin Schwantz. I was out at Circuit of the Americas the other day, and I saw the Fords out there testing, the BMWs out there testing. I'm not sure I saw the Corvettes there. Are those guys trying to get a leg up on you?
Well, you know, we had a pretty good test. We did a GM test at Road Atlanta a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So it was all the Corvettes, both DPs and GTs. And so, I don't know, I feel like we had a couple of rough races with the Visit Florida deal. And we had a really good two-day test there. So I know we got a fancy new paint job on the Visit Florida car. So I feel like that should have had at least a half a second in speed to it, and we'll see what we get. Colton's a difficult place. I mean, it's one of the probably more challenging tracks. It's always that balance of is it high speed, low speed, high downforce, or low downforce. Mm-hmm. But one of the, you know, to me, one of the best tracks in the world, and for sure one of my favorite cities in the world to get to come to Austin. So I got a big entourage coming. I've got 20 odd people.
Awesome.
Finally come and visit.
The championship's up still really close, too, isn't it? 6 or 7 points between two or three different cars?
I'm a little bit out of it. I missed the race with my conflict with Patron in the World Endurance Championship. So I'm a little bit further down, but my teammate, I think, is still in the top five somewhere. We're still, I think at this point, we kind of shift our focus to manufacture and try and get Corvette, at least the manufacturer championship again, which is looking pretty good as of now. So two races to go in IMSA, four races to go in WEC, maybe five races. I lose track at this point of the year, but kind of a long week, but so we're hoping for a good result.
Good luck's all I got to say.
Yeah, looking ahead to Austin, Ryan, obviously you always put on a show. I've loved watching you come here right from the first time that you did in IMSA. But in WEC especially, you've got a real battle going on in LMP2. Are we going to see more of the same in terms of what we saw at Mexico in terms of how close it is in that battle?
Yeah, for sure. I think that right now, you know, us especially, we switched to the Nissan this year with Patron, and I think we've kind of started to get our head around it. Then we made a big tire change. We went from the Dunlop to the Michelin right after Le Mans. So Mexico was only our second race on the Michelin. And they haven't had a huge factor in P2 for a number of years. So it's very much a development. We definitely got some pace in Mexico, and hopefully we can continue that in Cota. But yeah, it's such a good championship. I mean, I'm kind of very fortunate to be my third season right now in WEC, and lost count of how many seasons in IMSA at this point. But both cars, I think, have good opportunities to win, and both fields are great. It's just it's going to be a cool day. It's going to be a long day for me. So hopefully they're nice to me, both teams, and they don't make me work too hard.
I got an idea with that steering wheel thing. Why don't you just say, well, I'm just going to take the steering wheel from the IMSA car and just bring it over to the other car. That way you don't have to worry about all those buttons. Make it simple.
That's a great idea. Well, the good thing is they're not attached by a cord, so I can just flip one out and flip one on.
But on a serious note, I mean, braking points, time in the car, day to night. You're doing one race at the day and one at night.
That's crazy.
This is going to be a mind meld. This is going to really challenge you mentally.
Yeah, I'm trying not to think about it.
Good. I'm glad I brought it up.
I remember at the start of the year when, you know, I was negotiating the two deals and I had to get kind of blessings on both sides. And this was the one race that came up, like, in, you know, is this doable? I said yes, of course. I'm super confident at the time, but it'll be fine. The good thing is the car's lap times are not too dissimilar. The P2 car in WEC form has a lot less horsepower with a lot more grip, stickier tires. And in IMSA is the old school big horsepower, low grip, lower downforce. So it's not going to be too different. For me, the hardest thing is going to be remembering the rules and remembering rules, the green flag, yellows, full course yellows. They're very different now. They used to not be too different between safety cars. Now we have these virtual safety cars. We have full course yellow 8 kilometers. That's the one thing. And, you know, unfortunately, I'm not smart enough to just remember this stuff. So as long as the radio doesn't go out, I'm going to be good. And I'll have some. I've already sent notes to both teams to keep reminding me of the do's and don'ts so I don't make any mistakes. But I think we'll be okay. I'm looking forward to it.
I'll drop my commentary gig and come and do a spotting job for you.
Yeah, you can be my teacher. Just remind me what the do's and don'ts are. Unfortunately, I always ended up in the principal's office, so hopefully
not. Oh, you'll definitely have company there with Jonathan, Colin.
You know, Ryan, when you were talking about them coming to you about this and saying, do you want to do this? This is something you can never say no to. You have to you have to say yes and then later go, how the heck am I going to do this? But you can't say no to that, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, and my priority was always Patron, the deal. You know, I've had multiple years contract with them, and really I had to go to Ed Brown and Scott Sharp and really just beg them. The cool thing about those guys, especially Scott being, you know, a longtime driver, was he understands this is a profession and, you know, opportunities like this don't always come along. And I found myself with two great opportunities this year that, like you said, you can't say no to it. You know, there's years where it wasn't too long ago that I had no full-time deals in racing, and very fortunate to have a couple of full-time deals, great, well-funded programs, and opportunities to win, which, you know, as much as a lot of drivers say it's great just to be out there, it's not. It's about winning and putting yourself in good positions, and great bunch of guys on both sides between Visit Florida Racing and Tequila Patron Racing. So I'm lucky. I'm having a great year, and don't want it to really end, but on the other hand, it's been a long season.
Well, we know you're a learned scholar of the sport, and you follow all aspects, and it's been a hell of a weekend for motorsport this weekend. I don't know how much you've had a chance to watch or at least be informed of what was going on, given that you were racing yourself, but I got to ask you a question. We've got a Formula One championship that's heating up. We've got a MotoGP championship that's really heating up too, but your thoughts, first of all, Rosberg, Hamilton, are we going all the way?
Well, I have not seen the end of today's race.
Well, I won't tell you who won then.
I'm very much a Rosberg fan. I like his work ethic. And
then you should watch the race.
Last I saw, he was leading. But unfortunately, I think that Hamilton, there's not many drivers that really have that focus. And I think the mind games, I think that's phenomenal when it comes to the mind games. So
he's really going to enjoy it.
Yeah, more of a Rosberg fan, to be honest.
It's going to be interesting. You're absolutely right. And we were just saying earlier in the show about the psychological way that Hamilton has always, I think, had the upper edge on Rosberg, because Rosberg, in my opinion anyway, is a little bit of a, not too much, but a nice guy. And I think it's been his Achilles heel over the years. But I think that's changing because he's had his nose rubbed in it too long, and he has got the same equipment as Lewis. And I think yesterday was night and day to today and his performance, and you're halfway through it. But the bottom line, we were just saying with Kevin, you know, Hamilton beat him by half a second. It was humiliating yesterday, and you could see it on his face, whereas he started brilliantly today and Hamilton didn't. And I think psychologically, definitely Rosberg stepping up a bit this year.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's had a pretty mega season. And you know, it'd be nice if neither of them had to worry about these, you know, stupid penalties and stuff that's been on a Formula One. But yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm glad it's still a tight championship. You know, deep down, I'd rather see Raikkonen or Vettel win a couple of races here. And I think it's getting a bit boring for everybody. You know, we're only talking about two guys. It'd be nice to be talking about six or seven.
Yeah, I mean, we were just getting excited about the fact that MotoGP has never had as many winners since, I think it was 2006. And again, a new winner today. It was brilliant. So we're very excited for that sport. I'm just so excited for the Lone Star Le Mans this year. I don't know what it is, but I just got a feeling that, you know, we've always had some good racing. But I think this year, particularly with the championships and the classifications as they are, and certainly in WEC and in IMSA, that it's going to be a really good weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, even on the WEC side, such big grids, hugely deep experience. I think even looking at the GTM Pro, there's not a bad class this year. And to have, you know, even if you just look at the Mexico race with the changing conditions, you really saw how the different chassis performed. You know, at one point, the Russian car, the SMP, looked really strong as it dried up. The Allegia then became really strong. And then at the end, the Orica. So, yeah, it's nice to see the diversity and you know, ultimately the lap times are very close on the average of the race. And then in IMSA, I think what everybody's looking forward to in IMSA right now is next year. I think next year is going to be a huge deal. It's going to be nice to start fresh. You know, we're still in this merger of Grand Am and the LMS, and it hasn't gone as smoothly, I think, with the equipment. I think we did the best we could with what we had to try and keep it, you know, a good spectacle and also to make it fair for everybody. But unfortunately, along that road, you kind of lose some good teams and cars. But I think next year, if the rumors come true that, you know, what you're hearing about new teams coming in and GT teams stepping up to EPI and some new teams coming in from Europe, looking forward to seeing how the new equipment looks in general, and hoping for good things. But focus right now is Austin, and I know that you guys all put a good show out there for us, so we're looking forward to getting there.
Right, Ryan. Well, we really appreciate you coming on the show, and for the DL double, I think you ought to do barbecue and Mexican food.
Yeah, maybe we could get a restaurant to do a special dish.
There you go.
That sounds like a lot of hard
brisket and enchiladas. Burritos.
I think we've been trying to figure out. We're trying to work on something just now and make it some kind of charity donation thing. I do a lot of stuff for Rett syndrome. It's a disease that my niece suffers from, and we're trying to figure out something cool to do and raise some money for us. So if we do come up with something, we're running out of time. But if we come up with something, we'll let you guys know.
Absolutely. Right, well, perfect. We'll help get that word around, you bet.
When do you get into town, you know?
Wednesday morning, I'll be there.
All right. Well, we'll be there with bells on. We'll come and interview you and publicize you and make sure everybody knows what you're doing.
Excellent. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Ryan.
Travel safe, buddy.
See you in Austin.
Thanks.
All right, guys, we're along. We got to take a quick break. We'll be back after these messages live from Austin, Texas, Speed City.
Precision Camera and Video is the largest camera store in Texas with over 10,000 square feet and packed with all the latest manufacturer offerings. Founded in 1976 and still owned and operated by its founders Jerry and Rosemary Sullivan, Precision Camera is committed to the finest customer experience. With hand-picked products and on-hand experts, you won't find a more helpful, knowledgeable, and accommodating sales staff for quality service. Come see for yourself, Precision Camera and Video, 2438 West Anderson Lane.
Admit it. You've sat there on the couch and thought to yourself that you would be a better race car driver than that guy. Just as the Speed City guys say, it's time to get off the couch and get it in gear. Mustang 4 Challenge is here to make that happen. Get in our race cars and learn how to race. We take you from the couch to the checkered flag, whether for one race or for the entire season. See for yourself at Mustang4Challenge.com.
Hey everyone, Speed City host and Moto America commentator Jonathan Green here, letting you know that the long summer wait is over and it's time to go racing again. The grand finale of the Moto America season is just around the corner and the championships are all on the line. That's right, it's the Moto America Yamaha Superbike Challenge of New Jersey from September 9th through the 11th. Hayes, Bobier, Elias and Hayden as Yamaha try to defend against the hard-charging Suzukis. Come join us and see the best in two-wheel motorsport in America. Buy online and receive complimentary VIP paddock passes. Kids under 12 go free. For more information, go to www.motoamerica.com. The racetrack. It's where legends are born. Where only the finest machines earn their reputation for innovation and dominance. Such are the nameplates you'll find at Aston Martin of Austin, Lotus of Austin, Bentley Austin, and Rolls-Royce Motorcars. Austin exotic, iconic automobiles whose racing heritage turns everyday driving into an inspiring journey. Because you're never just along for the ride. Highway 183 north of McNeil Road.
Made the right choice. Talk 1370.
Ed Brown, and this is Speed City.
All right, welcome back to Speed City. We got Kevin Schwantz, world champion Kevin Schwantz, in studio. So we're going to talk a little more two wheels.
I thought we might talk NASCAR, Australian NASCAR.
Well, yeah, we do have to talk a little NASCAR.
My buddy Sean Henselwood, I may add, who's listening in Australia, reminded me that, you know, you're a bit of a hero down there, too. Are you one in NASCAR?
I won the first time I ever got in a NASCAR down there. Mind you, it was on a road course, so...
Who'd you beat? Did you beat anybody we'd know?
Yeah, a bunch of Australians.
What, like Wayne Gardner?
No, he wasn't actually there.
He
showed up at the next oval and was like, Schwantz is getting all this publicity. I've done something in NASCAR. I better try.
Love it. So he took his rivalry from two wheels with Gardner to four wheels. I love it.
That is crazy. I can't believe you won. That's really mean to the rest of us.
It was a three-race evening. It was wet. We ran wet tires for the first sprint race. Second sprint race was wet to dry. And I think most of us ran wets again and just burned them up. But I finished third, second, and then the last race was in the dry. I finished first, won 3-2-1 overall, got me the overall.
That's awesome. All right, well, we're going to take advantage of Kevin here. Let's talk about Moto America. I mean, it's been the second season. It's a fantastic season. We got the finale coming up.
You know, it's New Jersey, and weather could play a part.
Yeah, it usually does. And looking at the storms, yeah.
Well, and I guess the one great thing that we have to talk about being from Texas is Garrett Kirloff's leading the 600 series, 600 class. So hopefully a championship, a young up-and-coming Texan that I think shows a lot of future.
I don't want to put the muckers on him.
Big promise.
Yeah, I don't want to put the muckers on him because he's under intense pressure from one of the most naturally brilliant riders that we've produced in America for a long time. And, of course, I'm talking about J.D. Beach. I'm not taking anything away from Garrett, and he wouldn't mind me saying this because he works hard at his craft. But J.D., who was last year's champion, had a bad start when they changed the rules slightly last year, and this year, and he slightly struggled to get the bike up to scratch. And meanwhile, Garrett, right from the get-go here at COTA, was on it and has been leading, but the gap has come right down as the season's gone on, and he's under immense pressure right now. But if he holds it all together, and I think he will, you're right, I think it's really good news for Texas to have a great kid like Garrett do what he's doing.
Superbike class, Cameron Bobier leading it. Still some possibilities for the guys out there to possibly get the championship from him, but he'd have to be pretty silly and make some big mistakes there. So, if it's inclement weather, you can sure slip off and not score any points pretty easy.
Is he ready? to go to the big world stage. Obviously, that is what your old rival, Wayne Rainey, is all about, and what Moto America is all about, is to try to get these young guys to a position where they can do what you did and go to the world stage. I was interested to see Alex Lowe's getting an opportunity from Superbikes this weekend, riding Bradley Smith, a bike, because he was out. Opportunities are few and far between. When is Beaubier going to be ready?
That's the ride he should go take.
Yeah.
I mean, that'd be a perfect opportunity for him. He went over and did, he filled in for Guentoli.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In England.
And did so, well.
Yeah. You know, didn't do good in the first race. He finished top 10 in the second one. So, some more experience on the tires and the bikes, know the electronics a little bit better. I think Cameron has proven just how good he is. He got thrown into the deep end, had Mark Marquez as a teammate his first year in Grand Prix racing, and, you know, that would have made anybody look slow. So, I wish him the best.
So, Kevin, what do you think about 2 years, Moto America? Are we on the right path here with getting the job done of, you know, doing what Jonathan just said?
You know, it's to me, it's all been about TV and manufacturer support. You know, we need the rest of the manufacturers all to get back in full factory support teams. We need it. We need it to be a championship like a world championship is. We need it to be a world superbike. We need it to be the same level the British superbike is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's getting there. I think progress is being made. I don't go to a lot of the races. I keep tabs on what's happening in the classes. But, from what I hear from the people involved, John Ulrich is probably the guy I listen to the most about it. You know, I listen,
man responsible for getting him onto the next
I listened to him a little bit when I was up
and coming.
Good
man to listen to.
And he's still doing it, which I love. Yeah. He's still finding that young talent.
Yeah, and he's still got the desire to do it. I mean, he's motivated. He's enjoying it when his guys on the Suzuki 600s are winning the 600 classes. You talk to him the next day, he's just as excited as he is, I think, maybe after my tryout. So, I wish everybody the best, and I think Wayne and company are headed in the right direction anyway.
Last mention, I just want to mention KTM Cup, which is obviously dear to my heart. Brandon Pash, Anthony Masiato, two young guys coming up. They're battling it out. They're both from Jersey. Look out for them on BN Sports. It's going to be a doozy in a couple of weeks.
Awesome. Well
next week, actually.
All right, we're wrapping it up here. An amazing day. We didn't even get a chance to talk about it. I didn't even get to watch everything that happened this weekend. Just incredible. But I want to thank everybody for listening. Thanks to you, Kevin Schwantz, for coming in studio. It was fantastic to have your expertise.
Good love it, Goodwood.
Glad to be here. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. And thanks to Ryan Dial for coming on, and thanks to everybody. And go to CircuitOfTheAmericas.com and get your Lone Star Le Mans tickets, and then go to Speed City Broadcast and download some audio. Talk to you next week.
Happy travels, y'all.